You're listening to Talking Teesdale, a regular podcast covering Barnard Castle and the surrounding villages. Brought to you in association with the Witham Community Arts Centre.
So here we are once again with the Talking Teesdale podcast. I'm Stuart Laundy.
And I'm Jane Woodward.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, better than the weather.
You made me wait today.
I know.
I hope you had a nice lunch.
I had a lovely lunch, thank you very much. Not often I get out for lunch.
And then you slept it off.
Yeah. Yeah, I did have to have a quick snooze.
You know, you can't be, when you get to your age, you can't be doing without your 40 winks in an afternoon, just to set you up for the evening.
I blame the weather. It was stormy and I always get migraines when it's stormy. That's my excuse.
That's your excuse and you're sticking to it.
I am.
Excellent. A nice busy show coming up. We've got Zach and Shul Ahmed from Baboules.
All good.
About their links to the community and the restaurant's 30th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And we've got Josh Jones, stand-up guy. That's what he calls himself.
Okay, comedian. I don't know him.
No, me neither. Well, I didn't until I spoke to him the other day.
Right.
So he's coming up a bit later on.
Okay.
And a bit of What's On as well.
Yep. Lots happening.
Absolutely. We're into autumn now. I noticed your summer frocks put away as well.
It's starting to get chilly now.
It's turned September now.
That's it.
That frilly frock's not going to see the light of day till next June, is it?
No.
Neither's mine, actually. Right, on with the show.
Hi, I'm Jim.
And I'm Sheila.
We're volunteers at the Witham.
And you're listening to Talking Teesdale with Stuart and Jane.
Anyone in any way familiar with Barnard Castle will know that Baboules Restaurant is part and parcel of the town's high street. The restaurant began life as Spice Island and was rebranded in 2019 by operators Zach and Shul Ahmed in honour of their father, who founded the business. Well, Zach and Shul are celebrating the business's 30 years in Barnard Castle, and I caught up with them to reminisce and to find out why being part of the community was just as important as cooking up a good old curry. So for this week's community spot on the podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Zach and Shul from Baboules in Barnard Castle for the very good reason. Well, a couple of very good reasons, really. Firstly, it's 30 years since the family opened a restaurant in the town. Many people will remember Spice Island. And then six years ago since the rebrand and Baboules. It seems like 5 minutes. Can you guys believe it's been 30 years since the restaurant opened?
I remember when Dad opened it. I think I was 13 or 14, and I remember the opening kind of like, shindig that you have, you know, where friends and family turn up, and where we were living in Harrogate then, weren't we?
Yeah. We were upstairs on the opening.
Yeah.
Eating all the stash of kulfi that they had in their freezers.
Which is really nice. Indian ice cream, fantastic.
There was none left for the customers.
So I do remember that. And I think the next memory in Barnard Castle was when we started working there. So that'd be around early 2000.
Was there ever any chance of you not going into the family business?
Not really.
I mean, there was a period where we had our, our 9-to-5 jobs, didn't we?
Yeah, because we did two shifts. We worked in 9-to-5 and then we worked for the family, i.e. 5-to-10 or 5-to-12. And that was a part of our late teens, early 20s. And that was part of our life. Yeah, we had the opportunity to maybe carry on our 9-to-5 career because we were both in the banking industry. You know, I was working for Abbey National, if anybody remembers that bank. Shows my age, if anybody does. But, you know, and I think, Zach, you were in...
I was in Barclays.
So we were both in the banking sector.
We were excelling in our 9-to-5 jobs. But I think that lure of, when Dad said, look, I either have to sell or you guys have to take it over. The lure of being our own boss.
Yeah, I think that was a massive thing that, you know what, we don't have to answer to anybody apart from ourselves.
Did we only realize it's so hard work after we joined? So you don't realize how much, obviously, hard work Dad did. The time it takes. And it's 24 hours. It's not 9-to-5 where you clock off, go home and not worry. It's 24/7.
There's a romantic image of being a restaurant owner, and we had that romantic image, you know, how Dad used to do it. It was, you know, you're a restaurant owner, you know, you get eat what you want, drink what you want, you own it, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And there's a romantic kind of like perception of it. Once you delve into it, you realize that, yeah, the romanticism kind of dies down after a day or two when you have to go on your hands and knees and scrub the floor. So
now, the one thing I wanted to talk to you about is that as long as I've known you, which has been quite a few years now, as well as running the restaurant, there's a very strong connection to the community. I mean, you practically sponsor everybody I've ever come across, whether it's the football or cricket. I think this week I just read you've tied up with the golf club as well. Why is it so important for yourselves and the business to have that link with the community?
There's two things from my side, and I'm sure Zach's got more on his as well. It's culture. Our family culture was always about giving back. My father and his cousins or whoever came at the same time came with their shirt on their back. Literally, forget the shirt on their back. It was literally minus. They were in debt when they came in this country. They came here fleeing the repercussions of the Civil War and the atrocities that happened in 1971. So they came to make a better life for themselves, a better life for their family. So Dad always used to give back, and he instilled that into us. He was instilled into us from an early age that you work hard, you make money, and you help. You help whoever you can, and you try to do as many good deeds as possible. And our religion is based on charity as well. You know, that we have to pay 2.5% of our wealth to charity, and that's part of our religion. You know, every year, 2.5% of our wealth we give to charity. That's on a minimum. People give more than that. And then it's the family culture. And when we went to Barnet Castle, that culture was in Barnet Castle as well. You know, it's like everybody in Barnet Castle was like a family. You know, everybody knew each other. When there was a problem in Barnet Castle, everybody kind of rallied around and kind of helped that person. So our family culture, our religious culture, kind of had a synergy, if you want to call it, with the Barnet Castle's culture. And it just died from there. Everybody we sponsor is a really good cause, is a really good business or really good entity. You know, we do think about everything before we go ahead with it.
From an early age, we understand even though we may not have all the things we want in life, we're still in a better situation than many people who are our own family members.
We grew up with nothing. We grew up in a one-bedroom bedsit. You know, that's where we lived, and then we lived in a council estate. We lived many years in a council estate, and we worked our way, our family worked our way, you know, from there to Darlington and everywhere else, and eventually to Barnet Castle. And there was a lot of, you know, Dad, he worked really, really, really hard, really hard. But, you know, he gave back, and that's why that is the main thing, you know. It's in our blood, it's in our culture.
And, you know, I remember years back when we, you know, had the initiative for the school children and the school meals, and we provided food. And that just resonates with, as we grew up, we knew how hard it was to get fed, you know, the school meal and things like that. And we understood the struggle, and we saw the struggles of our parents to provide us lunch or this or that. You know, Dad had to bring food home from the restaurant so that we could get fed, you know, things like that.
We couldn't afford school lunches, so we used to take packed lunch. So our packed lunch, our sandwich was butter and sugar sandwiches, right? And no packet of crisps, nothing like that packet of crisps. You know, it's like that, and maybe an apple. Two of those sandwiches and an apple. That was our lunch. We never had a fizzy drink. The first time we actually ate out in a restaurant, I think we were 18, 19 or 20. We never ate out in a restaurant. We never even got a takeaway.
McDonald's was a treat. Yeah. Whenever relatives would come, honestly, it's like relatives would come and visit and whatever. McDonald's, I remember, it happened once in a blue moon.
Once in a blue moon, yeah. That was the restaurant. That was a night.
Banana milkshake.
Yeah.
So we're showing our age here. But no, you know, we as growing up, we were never spoiled, so we were very humble. And that just sets the tone to say that, you know, we're happy with what we have. Obviously, you always strive to want more and to get more, but we would never forget the struggles. And that makes an easier decision to put, rather than trying to put money in our pockets to support another cause or to support another establishment. Not only does it help somebody, it does help raise the profile of the restaurant as well, you know, and it's our dad's name on the wall. And the more Babbles is spoken about in a high way, it means that our father's spoken about in a nice way. And that's what we want at the end of the day. We want our dad's legacy to be remembered for the good that he always did. So it's essential that we carry that on. And obviously dad always, his slogan was, wasn't it? You know, always look after those who look after you. And our customers, our community in Barnard Castle support us on a weekly basis to come and eat at our restaurant. It's only right that we give some of that back in community projects.
Yeah. And speaking of looking after us, you've come up with a little promo to celebrate your 30 years.
That's right, yeah. So every week there's a special offer, a little reward for our customers to come and dine in. And yeah, it's not just a one-off. It's literally every week for 12 weeks, I think it is. And then there's a little bonus to it. So if you manage to stamp every offer, if you use every offer, you get a £20 voucher to claim. So that's another little treat at the end of it. So if you can be hardcore enough to get in every week and get that book stamped, then yeah, a good prize at the end.
Just one last thing from me. I've often wondered, because I can't remember us talking about this before, but what brought your dad to Barnard Castle in the first place, out of all the places that he could have chosen when he came over?
Ivor Johnson, isn't it? Is that his name? Mr. Johnson, as they called him.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it was obviously they had the takeaway in Darlington, dad and his partners, and the customer, I'm quite sure they called him Mr. Johnson. I don't know if he's still around anymore. We used to get a takeaway from Barnard Castle. You'd come to Down and you'd always say, you need to open one in Barnard Castle. And he showed them that building because he said, oh, there's something available in Barnard Castle. You need to come and have a look at it. And I think it was a sandwich shop or something, Humphrey's sandwich shop, because it was a clove shop before that. It turned into a sandwich shop. And they showed him that. And then the rest is history. They took it on and changed it into a restaurant.
And of course, now you've gone the other way back because you've gone back to Darlington now to open Babbles in Darlington.
We needed to go back to Darlington. And at one point, there was a Spice Island in Darlington and it didn't go according to plan. So we felt like we had unfinished business. Yeah. You know, it was a big venture which Dad did with his partners and it didn't quite work out. And
We're partly to blame for that as well, because Dad kind of left it to us to run, and we were not at the maturity level or the age to run a business. And yeah, so I think part of the downfall, there was a lot of other factors, but I think part of the downfall was us. So we had to rectify that, you know, as you know, we need to do something in Darlington to just show that we actually do know what we're doing. And obviously we didn't, but we do kind of thing. So, yeah, it's worked out all right.
Well, listen, Zach and Shul, thanks very much for your time. And here's to the next 30 years.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm the one and only Josh, the man, the myth, the legend. And you are listening to Talking Teasdale with Stuart and Jane.
Thanks to Zach and Shul. Always good to catch up with them. Jane's back here now. How are you doing, Jane?
I'm okay.
Good, good, good. Plenty going on. We're into the autumn season now, so a lot more going on than in the last month or so.
A lot more, yes. It's packed.
Right, excellent. So we'll kick off with Saturday, September the 6th.
Yes, we've got Smoove and Terrell on the evening.
I'm looking a bit blank.
Funk and Soul.
Funk and Soul.
Standing gig, open bar, lots of dancing.
Excellent.
So come along to that.
Get your
tickets
dancing.
On the door.
Get
if
your
you
dancing
haven't got
shoes
yours.
On.
Exactly, yeah.
Very good. And then...
And then we have a new exhibition opening.
Oh, splendid.
Next week.
Yes, go on. Tell me more.
Is John Abraham. He's not been before. He's a self-taught artist.
I was going to say, not somebody I've come across, I don't think.
No, works in acrylics and the odd watercolour. And his exhibition is called Faces and Places.
Very good.
And he has a preview evening and he's opening it out to anyone that wants to come along on Tuesday, 9th of September, 6 till 8.
Excellent. So pop along if you want to have a look at some new work.
Yep.
Jolly good.
And then Wednesday the 10th.
Oh, we're in Yeehaw.
Yes, Made in Tennessee, they're back. Night of Country Music, Nashville.
Yeah. Marvellous.
Sounds like your kind of thing, Stuart.
You're not a country music fan.
I do quite like it, but it's not my favourite genre.
Yeah, I do like a bit of country. I like a bit of sort of modern country. Mm.
Yeah.
Johnny Cash is brilliant. I grew up with Johnny Cash because mm-hmm. my dad was a big Johnny Cash fan. So Folsom Prison Blues, that sort of thing, right up my street. But mm-hmm. And I quite like a bit of the old stuff, you sort of Dolly Partons, that sort of thing. But to be perfectly honest, I do like a lot of the new stuff.
Yeah, I think this covers everything.
Well, that's all right then.
Yes.
Right up my street then,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, and it's selling fast, so excellent. Get in there quick.
Jolly good. And then what is up my street is the following night.
Yes, the UK Rock Show.
They came last year as well, didn't they?
They came with Bon Jovi.
Oh, did they?
Yes. Oh. So same group.
Ah,
and that was excellent. So this will be equally spectacular.
I bet they do a bit of Led Zeppelin.
I'm sure they will.
And a bit of AC/DC.
80s classic rock, I think, is...
80s classic
yeah.
rock?
Yeah.
Hair metal.
Mm-hmm.
Motley Crue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You too young to have a mullet.
I didn't have a mullet, no.
I did. Hard to believe now.
No, I can't imagine that.
There's a little hole in the ozone layer that I made through the amount of hairspray that I threw on my mullet around about 1984.
I'd love to have seen that.
Oh, those were the days. I'll show you a picture.
Right. I look forward to that.
It'll be our little secret. We're not putting that up online anywhere. So a couple of good nights there. And then, we'd better mention something that's not taking place.
Yes, Angela Barnes. Friday the 12th. It has been postponed until next year.
Excellent. Good stuff. Look forward to seeing Angela Barnes when she comes.
Yes, but we do have comedy on Saturday night.
We do indeed.
Josh Jones.
Yes. Now, we'll say no more about Josh Jones because in just a second... I've got an interview with him. Spoke to him the other day. He set off, his tour started on Thursday with a gig at the Georgian in Richmond.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
So he's only had two shows to get it, you know, to get everything perfected before he comes to us.
Right. So he's at Richmond and then...
I can't remember. I think it's Leeds or somewhere last night. And then he's with us.
Right.
So we'll see how he goes.
Okay. Look forward to that.
Absolutely. And so, excuse me, nearly fell off my chair. where can we get tickets for all these lovely things?
By going on the website.
Which is?
www.thewitham.org.uk.
And if we wanted to ring up?
You can call 01833 631107.
Marvellous.
Yes.
Good stuff. Right, we shall talk to you next week.
You will. Look forward to it.
And coming up right now, Josh Jones.
Bye.
Hi, this is Louise, Queen of Social Media, and you're listening to Talking Teasdale with Stuart and Jane.
Our special guest this week is comedian Josh Jones, stand-up guy, who's now fully recovered from an ill-fated stint on ITV's Dancing on Ice, which saw him withdraw after a couple of weeks due to a training injury. He's just set off on a huge UK tour with his latest show, I Haven't Won the Lottery, so here's another tour show. I caught up with Josh for a bit of a chat a couple of days before he set off on the tour, which brings him to the Witham here in Barnard Castle on Saturday the 13th of September. So I'm delighted to be joined by comedian Josh Jones, stand-up guy. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, are you?
Yeah, not so bad, not so bad. So we're talking 2 days before you set off on tour. Are you the sort of person who gets nervous before such things?
The tour is just because it's a new show. The thing I'm more nervous about is just remembering it all. So the first one's the hardest because you just need to remember it. But I'm quite confident. I think this is the best show I've ever written. So I think it should be all good, hopefully.
how much preparation goes into putting a show together to take on tour?
I think I need a good year to write a good show, to write a really good show with good jokes, because you have to test it out all year at gigs and stuff. With stand-up, you don't know if it's good until you've tried it, and then you need to keep doing it on stage to get the joke just right. So it takes a bit of a while to get a good show together. But yeah, I've been working on this for about a year.
This is your third tour, as far as I can see. So is the process getting easier, or does it get harder having to dream up new material?
No, it's getting easier because I'm better. This is the best I've ever been. You get better every year. So, it's been easier. This show's, I've not really had any, like, moments of, like, stress. Or I haven't really had any little, like, breakdowns or whatever. I've just been quite, like, yeah, it's happening next week. Oh, God. Oh, have a quick. Like, it seems like it's come together quite nice, which is good.
This will be your debut performance in Barnard Castle.
Yeah.
So perhaps best to introduce yourself. Give us a potted history of the Josh Jones story.
Well, I've been doing stand-up for 10 years and I've done quite a bit of telly and stuff, but I've been headlining all the clubs for ages, started in working men's clubs and gig all over. But I've gigged all over the UK, Europe, gigged in Australia and stuff. So, yeah, it's going all right. I'm doing all right. But Barnard Castle, yet to have gigged in Barnard Castle.
And, the ultimate test.
Yeah, well, it's mad because they said you want to do it, and I'm not going to lie, I didn't know where it was. And it's rare that I'd, especially in English town, that I'm gigging somewhere I've never gigged before. That's quite rare now. So I'm quite excited to see. Not going to lie, it is probably the least selling one of the whole tour, but I've never been there before, and I don't think the population's that big, really, is it, really?
It's fair to say we're a bit rural.
Yeah, so if you do come, bring about 20 of your mates, that'd be cracking. Thank you.
What sort of comedian are you? Are you a storyteller? Are you a joke, sort of one-liner, or a bit of both?
Just loads of jokes about my life, really. But yeah, I write a lot of jokes.
Yeah, well, you're not one for the sort of Ronnie Corbett 10-minute monologue.
I've got some routines, some longer routines, but yeah, it's mainly just jokes and stuff.
Is there any in there about ice skating?
I've got a bit about me doing Dancing on Ice, but I'll be honest, I didn't really enjoy doing it. I don't want to do reality telly ever again. So I'm not going to speak about it that much.
I was going to say, when it comes to reality telly, I think Dancing on Ice is probably the hardest thing you could possibly have picked, to be perfectly honest.
The ice skating bit were quite fun, that's fine. I just don't want to do reality telly. I'm not bothered about being famous. I just want to do gigs.
All right. You're happy on the road, you're happy touring, you're happy in front of the audience.
Yeah, I'll just do stand-up. That's what I've been working at for 10 years.
And this tour... Is it in any way connected to your previous tours? Is it something completely different? Is it a kind of a carrying on from where the last one left off?
Well, no, it's just a kind of what's going on in my life right now, really. So I was just talking about where my life is right now. I'm pretty knee deep into my 30s now. So all the rock and roll sort of going out after gigs, getting mental, that's all stopped, and now I've got two cats, a dog and a power washer, so pretty chill.
I was going to say, the days of being sort of young and daft are sort of behind you now, but you're not quite ready for the pipe and slippers yet, I don't think.
No, I love a night out, but it's got to be done by 11, and that's me. And I'm loving meals now. Like, I like going out and having a proper meal.
Oh, you say it's the slippery slope to middle age.
Yeah. I welcome it. I think I'll do quite well in middle age. I love a crime drama. I feel like that's a proper middle-aged mum sort of crime drama, little dog walk, maybe go for a coffee. That's all right.
You're the dream ITV3 viewer.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
The show that you're doing, is it suitable for everybody? Is it a more adult sort of a show?
I'd say 16 and over, 15 and over, 16. But it's for adults. I don't write comedy for kids. I don't want kids in my show. That's annoying. People write family friendly adult, like, yeah, I don't want that. Me and my boyfriend talk about when we get married, we don't want kids at the wedding. Like, do you know, I think weddings and comedy clubs are for adults then.
When did you realise that comedy was for you?
I kept getting told to do it.
Yeah.
So I kind of got pushed into it. It wasn't really something I wanted to do, really. And then, I kept getting told to do it. So eventually so many people told me to do it that I did it. And then 10 years later, it's my job.
And can you remember back to the first sort of proper gig in front of a paying audience that you did?
Yeah, I was bladdered, actually, because I was quite nervous.
I'm surprised you can remember it then.
Yeah. No, I was proper nervous. So I had a bottle and a half of wine to myself. I was absolutely, I was bladdered.
But any idea how the show went?
I think it went all right in my head. But the gig after that went all right when I was sober.
This one, what's it called? This one's called I Haven't Won the Lottery, So Here's Another Tour Show. Are you a lottery player?
Yeah, I do put it on every week. Yeah. I put it on. It was Manchester Pride about 2 weeks ago. So I put double on than what I normally do because I thought, well, if I'm going to win, it's going to be, I'm gay and from Manchester. That feels like my weekend, do you know what I mean? So I'm going to put the lottery on, but I didn't win anything.
Have you ever won anything on the lottery? The most I ever won was about 30 quid, I think.
So I won 300 quid. 300, it was either 300 or 400 quid.
Oh, man, luxury.
And I was a bit of an idiot. I put 100 of it back on.
Oh, was that on the lottery or was that on the scratch cards?
On the lottery.
Yeah. I've never done the scratch cards. That's a slippery slope.
Yeah. But do you know what, though? They are quite fun. Me and my boyfriend get one. Probably like once every 2 weeks, there's like a word search one. So but I'm dyslexic, so it takes me about 5 hours.
So it's a big tour that you're doing. You still have the energy for these things.
Yeah, I'm only 32. Like you said, I'm not in my slippers yet. I'm all right. Yeah, I've got the energy to go to gigs.
it's a long time on the road. Do you cope well with being away from home?
I'm kind of used to it, really, because even when you're not on tour, you're still traveling to gigs. It's just not you're on a mixed bill. Whereas now people are paying to see me on purpose, so I travel like this all the time. Makes no difference to me, really.
I'd be right in thinking you didn't do Edinburgh this year, is that right?
I only went for 3 days. I normally go for the full month, but I only went 3 days this year, and it was delightful. All my mates, by the time I got there, they'd all been there a couple of weeks, so they looked knackered, and I felt like Naomi Campbell stood next to him. I felt so sexy, because they looked shattered and done in, and yeah. I kept getting photos of them because I looked dead fresh.
Do you enjoy the Edinburgh experience when you're up there sort of working?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit like, not to go into the politics of it all, but the comedians don't get paid well. So like everybody makes money off the back of it. You know, so it's weird. You'd be shocked how many people get paid from me telling jokes when I write and tell the jokes. But when I put a tour on, it's expensive, you know? So, and same with Edinburgh, but Edinburgh's 10 times worse. It's just so expensive. So it was nice to not have to worry about money for an August, because most comedians go up and lose money, really.
Yeah, I mean, the impression I've got, after speaking to a few comedians who've been up there, it's more kind of a showcase thing rather than anything else.
Yeah, but the thing is as well, loads of TV is not even going up there anymore, because TV is not, loads of it's dying off. They're not making as much comedy telly because they keep making reality telly. So even those TV production companies don't even go up. So you're like, is it worth it then? Because like when I was in one of the more expensive venues, you know, we're doing a show every day for a month. I sold out every single day. And then at the end of it, I owed $2,500. And they were charging like 15 quid a ticket. So where's all that money going? You know, it's ridiculous. And the comedians don't get it. So, yeah, I don't know. Where I was last time, the Monkey Barrel, that's a better venue for the comedians. They get better money, so that's decent. I'd do it with them again.
Looking to the future, do you see yourself continuing as a touring comedian, or would you rather do you see yourself sort of more as a writer than a performer?
No, I want to do stand-up forever. Yeah, that's all I want to do. Yeah,
in the blood.
Yeah, that's all. That's me. I just want to be gigging. I want to write a few plays and stuff. But yeah, I want to just keep touring.
Yeah. Before you say you've been at this for sort of 10 years now, what's the best job and the worst job you've had?
Do you know what? I was a really decent waiter when I worked in restaurants, and I was a restaurant manager, and I was pretty good. I'd get really good tips. I was good at that. I wasn't good probably for the people I worked for, because they never used to do a stock check or whatever. So when someone's food were late or whatever, I'd just say, oh, your drinks are free, don't worry about it. And I shouldn't have done that, but I did, because it just saved me getting a load of hassle. But it was all right. I enjoyed doing it and made people happy, not the restaurant owners.
That strikes me as good customer service.
Yeah, I thought it was. And then people used to tip me really well because, you know, they had a bottle of wine for free because of me. So I'd say, oh, don't worry about it, it's free.
Is there a job that you absolutely did where you sort of left after a day or anything like that?
There was a hotel in Manchester that was awful. The woman who ran it was a monster. And then there was a call centre as well. Oh. I got in trouble for being on the phone for too long, which is mad. Because I was chatting for this woman for ages, and I got in trouble because I was on the phone for over an hour.
Well, I don't think there'll be any problems with you talking for an hour when you come to see us in Barney. So, Josh, we wish you all the very best with the tour, and we look forward to seeing you when you get to the Witham.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And a reminder that Josh will be on stage at the Witham in Barnard Castle on Saturday, September the 13th. Tickets are only available from Funny Way to Be Comedy. Go to www.funnywaytobe.com. And that's it for this week. I do hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If so, please give us a follow, subscribe to us, give us a like, that sort of thing. From Jane and from me, we'll be back next time with another Talking Teasdale.
Thanks for listening. We'll be talking Teasdale again soon. In the meantime, please spread the word. Like, share and subscribe. Or go online to thewitham.org.uk.